All right, that was My Name is Murder off of the new Galacticon album, Galacticon 2, Become the Storm. Pre-order is now. Go and find that wherever you get your albums, blah, blah, blah. All right, John Drake, it's time to get into some Metallica talk.
Let's do it.
And actually, going back through it, I didn't hate some of the albums as much as I thought I did, because, you know, we brought this topic up, and I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go check out some of the lower ranking albums, and I kind of went through them. I'm like, you know what? I don't really hate them as much as I used to. So there's still hate there, though.
Yeah, there's three that I hate. So
they're right, definitely so in the bottom. We're gonna go 10-1. We're gonna go back and forth. I will let you start with your number 10 Metallica studio album, and this is the 10 studio albums. This doesn't count S&M or Garage Days or any of that other nonsense, Alive, Shit, Binge, and Purge, all that stuff, just the 10 official studio albums.
We should have put Live, Shit, Binge, and Purge in there, because it would have actually placed higher than half of this stuff.
I think, in all honesty, Garage Days would probably be top three for me, but... Yeah.
Yeah, Garage Days is kick ass. I might agree with that. At least top four. So
yeah.
But my number 10, which I hope is your number 10 as well, because it's like one of the worst, most putrid pieces of shit to ever be put to record, is Saint Anger.
Stanger is also my number 10, and I haven't listened to it yet. I saw that someone had re-recorded Saint Anger, like with normal tones or whatever, and supposedly it's listenable, but I haven't actually listened to it.
I mentioned that to Aiken a while ago, and so he and I have heard that, and what it does is it demonstrates that some of the riffs aren't bad, but the songs themselves are still utter crap.
Yeah.
And
kind of going back, and I had been on the Decibel Geek podcast a long time ago as part of their Metallica discussion. Like, we actually did a album by album discussion, and even listening to it back then, you know, there are a lot of really good riffs, but none of them go together, if that makes any sense.
No, it is. And I think all you need to know about that is to look at the Some Kind of Monster documentary, and with Lars and Kirk trying to put their two cents worth in, you know, I understand you're in the biggest band in the world, but stay in your lane. And yeah. I think as we go through our list, we'll see that the common factor as the music gets better and better is that it's pretty much what as the songs become more and more universally written by Hetfield alone, the stuff gets better and better. Right. So,
or played by Hetfield alone, not necessarily written by Hetfield alone. But I mean, a lot of those early albums, I mean, that's all James, and then Kirk would just do the solo. But Saint Anger, I believe that's when they let Kirk actually play rhythms, and that's where you can tell. All right, so what's your number 9?
My number 9 is Reload, or as I called it at the time, Retire. Yeah, they wrote all the songs for Load and Reload. There was barely a good album between them. So the fact that this was the stuff that was left over from Load it did not bode well at all. So, I mean, when they came out with The Memory Remains and that at the end, I just wanted to shoot myself. Like, that's awful.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into Reload in a minute for mine. Actually, I did not have Reload at number 9. I had Death Magnetic at 9. If that makes
sense. Wow, really?
Yeah, I made that today. Kind of going back and listening to. Like, Load and Reload were going to be, you know, 9, 8, and 9 or whatever. And then actually listening to them, I don't know if it's maybe over time or what, but there are some hits on Load and Reload. But like, to me, there's nothing that really like, because I went back and listened to Death Magnetic again today, and it's as good of an album as it is. It doesn't catch me as maybe some of the, you know, stuff off of Load and Reload. And I'm a staunch hater of Load and Reload, but I think I might have softened a little bit as I said in the early beginning of the episode.
Oh man, I could not disagree anymore. All Nightmare Long on Death Magnetic is better than anything on Load and Reload combined. I love that song. I mean, Death Magnetic was the album they finally came back to sounding like Metallica. I mean, it's not like any of the classic five, but yeah. It actually sounded like Metallica. And I was like, okay, You know, I mean, people make fun of the production because it was too loud, but considering what their complaints were about the previous three albums, if all you have to complain about is that it's a loud record, that's nothing.
I think the one thing that I liked about it, and I've kind of gone on this, I don't know what when I talked about it on this podcast, but I mean, I worked in a record store the day that Death Magnetic came out, and you know, seeing the classic logo back like was enough for me to just fall in love with the album. I know how stupid that sounds, but I mean that Metallica logo that was on Saint Anger, Load and Reload, it drove me up a wall. It still looks terrible to me, and just the classic, you know, sharp points, and you know the logo that's going to hurt you if it, you know, if it punches you in the face. Logo to me like that was enough to draw me back in. There's a lot more riffs and stuff on the album. You know, it had a bunch of had a lot of great stuff to, you know, going for it, but listening to it again today, I didn't really, you know, latch on to anything as maybe some of the songs on Load and Reload.
Yeah, I didn't latch on to almost anything from Load and Reload, and Death Magnetic, I was like, yeah, now that, if I'm going to buy a Metallica record, that's what I want to hear. You know, I don't want to hear Unforgiven 2 and Mama Said and all this, you know, it's, you know, Metallica going country, like, I don't need that.
All right, so what's your number 8?
Well, shouldn't be any surprise, it is Load.
Nice. Actually, my number 8 also.
I don't know about for you, but for me, it was a little better than Reload. I mean, at least there was, I mean, it was more tolerable. I mean, stuff like, you know, King Nothing, you know, was all right. And, you know, Bleeding Me, while it's not my favorite, at least is somewhat interesting. And, you know, I mean, at least there was a couple things you're like, all right, this isn't too bad. But it'll always be the record for me. I don't know how you feel about this, but it'll always be the record for me where I listened to it the first time and went, what the fuck, Metallica?
No, I get it. I mean, you know, I came off, and to kind of go into my background with Metallica, you know, when the Black Album came out, I was 12. So, I mean, that was like my introduction into metal was, I listened to Kiss as a kid from like, you know, 8, 9 years old till 12. And then Metallica comes like, you know, comes mainstream, gets into my brain. And then like, it was only Metallica for three years or something like that. Like it was, you know, Black Album. It was going back to the catalog. It was being in a band that only played Metallica songs. It was, you know, one of my first big shows I ever saw was Metallica. Like it was, you know, my dad used to joke that my first words were probably Metallica at one point.
Right.
So Metallica was my world. And then, you know, then Load comes out and we go and get it. The logo's changed. There's blood and semen on the cover. There's like no double bass on the album. It's like all these kind of rocking songs. They're not metal. And, you know, I saw the band through Load Reload era live. And, they always played the classic hits. But those albums just always bugged me. I don't even know if I bought Load, and to tell you the truth, back in the day.
That was the last one I bought. I'll just say it was the last one I bought. So,
I bought Death Magnetic, but it was because I worked in a record store and it was on sale for $5 day it was out.
But. Yeah, I just remember, see, Load for me technically really could be the worst one just because of the emotional impact it had on me, because Metallica was the first metal band that I discovered and I was like 12, actually probably more like 10 in 87. So I was like 11, whatever it was around that age. And I absolutely devoured Metallica, like those first five albums. And I had books and I knew every, to this day, like, I'm like a trivia master with like Metallica from like 81 to about 94.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I read, you know, Metallica Unbound. I read all the books. I read, you know, I watched A Day in the Life or A Year in the Life ton of times. Cliff them all. You know, I watched that religiously. Yeah. All that stuff.
Yeah. At one point when they only had 5 studio albums out, I had 45 Metallica CDs because I would go to the record store that had imports and I had all the singles and bootlegs and imports and all this other stuff. I had posters, and I'll never forget when Load came out and I was driving around with my friends. I'm like, this is absolutely garbage. And, you know, you read Metallica Unbound. Load was against everything they always said they would everything they stood for, they went against. And it was like that turning point of this. I mean, when they said we didn't sell out, oh yeah, you did. Oh yeah, you did. And you said it yourself in interviews back in, you know, time around puppets and justice and stuff, like the stuff you did on Low, you sold out. So I'll never forget, we were moving out of our house. My parents divorced and we had a garage sale, and I put a sign up on one of the tables that says, I have a bunch of Metallica stuff. Ask me about it. And I would bring, and I sold every bit of it except for the first five CDs. I sold 40 imports, bootlegs, my books, my posters. I was so angry. I sold it all because of Load. It was so shitty.
That was probably tied into your parents' divorce too. I mean, you know, if you want to talk about it, cry it out a little bit. You know, this is the place to do it.
No, I was the reason they divorced. I told them to divorce. I'm like, it was a long situation, but I'm like, well, you just get divorced already. It's goddamn ridiculous. Stop it. You need to be divorced.
All right. So you know that my number seven is Reload. So what's your number seven?
My number seven is Death Magnetic.
So you're not too far fetched, too far off of mine.
No, but I've gotten past the ones I don't like, and now we're into the ones that I enjoy. There's three Metallica records that I think are just utter garbage. And, you know, Death Magnetic, I actually liked. So
yeah, the jump between seven and six on my list is, you know, there should be like a list of 100. And, you know, this is 90, 97, 98, 99, 100. And then we're at the front, like the leap between my seven and six in my brain.
Yeah, I had that too. For me, it was, I think six is kind of in a gray area between the two, between the bottom four and the top five. But I think there's definitely, you know, I don't think that I'll be surprised if our top five aren't at least the same five albums.
All right. So what's your number six?
My number six is Hardwired to Self-Destruct.
Yeah, mine too. Mine is the same on that. And in all honesty, man, and I said this a long time ago, I think if this album came out after the Black Album, I think that Load and Reload would be a little bit more tolerable, because I think there's classic elements of the Black Album and previous stuff, but then there's also like a little bit of that Load and Reload kind of jammy Southern Rocky stuff in it too. So, I mean, you get the best of both worlds in this album. So if you had this album as maybe a buffer between the Black Album and Load, I think Load might not be such a, like when Load came out, to me, it was such a drastic turn that it turned me off to where, but like, and going back and listening to it today and listening to it over time, there's a couple of songs, you know, like the singles and stuff that I don't necessarily hate as much as I used to. I don't know if that's because I've gotten older and, you know, my thrash band that I was head over heels for is not gone. You know, that when Load came out, like my whole world crumbled at that point.
Yeah.
And then, but now, you know, 20 years later, 25 years later, I'm, you know, a little bit more like, all right, maybe, you know, maybe some of those songs are a little bit more jammy. And, you know, that Metallica did kind of revert back to their thrash elements on Death Magnetic and Hardwired. So you're not necessarily, you don't necessarily hate Load and Reload as much in my brain. Maybe that's where I am.
I would still hate those records. They're just shit. I would. And I it's funny you mentioned, you know, it's like the, if it would have come out after the Black Album thing, I feel that way about Death Magnetic. I've always wondered what Metallica's career would be like if you just go from the Black Album, the next out, and just skip all those years, and all of a sudden it's 2008. And let's not say 2008, but, you know, just like do a, you know, deletion of those years between like 95 and 2007, and this, the next record was Death Magnetic, because, you know, they'd still be huge and probably still the biggest band in the world, but you wouldn't have that garbage period of, you know, 12 years or 13 years or whatever it was.
I think a band like Metallica needed their Load Reload era, in all honesty. I think they needed that kind of that other fan base to kind of latch on to them too. I think if they would have continued to be just that heavy metal band, I think they would have been more of like a Megadeth or something, or like a Slayer, you know, where they didn't really, I know they had a little bit more commercial success than Slayer. And then, you know, Megadeth had their moment with, you know, the Countdown to Extinction and Rust in Peace era. But what would they be in stadiums right now had they not had that kind of the ain't my bitch fuel era, you know, to kind of grab a whole nother segment of fans? Or would they just still kind of continue to be a thrash band that, you know, still plays arenas or still plays, you know, big theaters and stuff like that? Where would they have gone? And you know, kind of through the 90s and the 2000s.
Yeah, I would have been fine with that, though. I mean, they were playing arenas on Justice, and then they were playing, you know, several nights in a town in arenas with the Black Album. So I mean, at that point, if you just keep doing that type of thing, I don't think that's necessarily such a bad thing.
Yeah, but Megadeth and Slayer were both at one point playing pretty decent sized arenas, but those bands now struggle in any kind of large venue.
But they never had that monster commercial album like the Black Album was. You know, I mean, even Countdown to Extinction, as big as that was, it wasn't something that, you know, has gone on to sell between, you know, 17 million, 18, whatever it is, million copies worldwide, like the Black Album. So I think when you have an album like that, I mean, just look at Load and Reload, how many people absolutely hated it. And those damn things still went like 5-6 times platinum.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Black Album, after you have the Black Album, you can pretty much do whatever you want. So I can see where you're coming from with that. To me, it was unnecessary. And I know for me, it killed my fandom. I mean, to this day, I can't listen to Lars Ulrich play drums. It just it infuriates me. And when he does these goddamn interviews and says, you know, if you could have anybody play drums for Metallica, if you couldn't, who would it be? Oh, Phil Rudd from AC/DC. Yeah, because that's what people want. The guy that plays goddamn Thunderstruck is then going to go play Dyer's Eve. That's exactly what people want, you know?
Yeah, and I've made this point a long time ago, though. I think Lars's limitations actually helped Metallica not become Megadeth. I think had James and Kirk and those guys had a Nick Menza, had a Dave Lombardo back there behind the kit, they could have done some really intricate things and done some really off the, you know, crazy thrash stuff. But Lars's limitations kept them to almost being like a thrash pop band and didn't allow them to go too far. So I think that because there's that one show out there, and I refer to this a lot, but there's that one show where Lars didn't make it. So like Joey Jordison from Slipknot plays a song or two, Dave Lombardo plays a song or two, and it sounds fucking amazing. Like Dave Lombardo as drummer of Metallica sounded amazing. I don't care what anybody says. I've heard people say, oh man, it just didn't sound right. And I'm like, no, it sounded fucking amazing. But had Dave Lombardo been there to write those songs, I think that it might have gone, how about we try 5-4 here, or, you know, let's try like an 11-8 part right here, stuff like that. And I think where James James probably has that mind to where he would want to write stuff like that, maybe write more complicated stuff, but Lars's limitation grounded the band.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I mean, I can't deny that. I mean, there's a lot of logic there, but it's just, to me, the reason it pisses me off is that, I mean, he was never, you know, great. He was always a very serviceable metal drummer.
Yeah.
You know, he was good, you know, on the early albums, and you listen to the live stuff, you know, he was very good, especially around the time of Puppets, you know, the party. You could tell on a lot of the recordings from like the Justice tour that he was, you know, probably a little hammered on stage or something. But it's just the fact that you listen to him now and he's so this simplistic garbage, and the way that he's gotten sloppier, it's like he doesn't care. And I've always had a huge problem with musicians that obviously have that kind of attitude of, well, I'm this guy and you're going to eat whatever shit sandwich I give you because of my name. Like David Lee Roth on the recent Van Halen tours, he was god awful and he didn't give a shit because he's like, oh, people crapped on Sammy, they just want me, so I can just go out there and make fart noises on the mic and people will love it and go, it's Diamond Dave. I hate that outlook, and Lars somewhat seems to have that because his playing is just shit anymore.
Right. All right, so we both had Hardwired at number 6. So let's pick a song off of Hardwired and throw that on the thing real quick. And what song off of Hardwired would you like?
Spit Out the Bone.
That was going to be my pick. So let's check out Spit Out the Bone and then get into our top 5.
This is Dave Lombardo and you're listening to Talk to Me. We'll be right back.
All right, that was Spit Out the Bone. And let's get into the top five Metallica albums as told by Joshua Toomey and John Drake on the Talk Toomey podcast. So what's your number five, sir?
Mine might end up being a little bit surprising to some people, but my number five was Kill 'Em All. I think ranking the top five were a little difficult for me. Number one was obvious for me, but the other four, it's one of those things where you like all of them a lot. So how do you rank five albums that you really, really, really enjoy?
Right.
So you have to really kind of nitpick it a little bit. And I think for me with Kill 'Em All, I'm kind of a production freak. So as much as I love a lot of 80s stuff, the only thing I wish I could change is, you know, the production value.
I can see that. Kill 'Em All to me, it sounds like way more like kind of more of the new wave of British heavy metal and the punkiness of the band. You know, there's to me, Kill 'Em All just I go in cycles. Like you said, these top five albums are truly interchangeable in my opinion. Like it's a week by week basis. Like, oh, one week, I mean, Kill 'Em All could be number one. 1 week just because that's what I'm listening to, or, you know, or like my list, you know, which Kill 'Em All comes up in on a minute, but you know, Kill 'Em All is just as for a debut album, fucking fantastic album.
Oh, it's one of the best ever. I mean, really, I mean, the songs are legendary. It's the template for everything that came after it, really. I mean, it started an entire genre of music. It's like, you know, when you look at something like Nevermind by, you know, Nirvana. I mean, it had that kind of impact on the world of hard rock and heavy metal. So, I mean, it's incredible in that respect, for sure. So what was your number five?
My number five on this list, and like I said, it's interchangeable. And on most top 10 lists, this is very low, but I think Ride the Lightning is my number five.
Wow, no kidding.
Yeah, and honestly, just because of the four ahead of it, in my opinion. And I'll just go ahead and say that my number four was Kill 'Em All. So, but Ride the Lightning, to me, you know, as much as I love it, there's, you know, if I put it on right now, I would probably be like, oh man, this is a great album. This is my number one album. But just off of like, I haven't listened to it in a while. You know, Fade to Black, For Whom the Bell Tolls, you know, Fight Fire with Fire. You know, now that I think about it, it probably should be higher, but it's still a great album. But to me, Kill 'Em All had a few more jams, in my opinion.
I could see that. I could see that. Yeah, my number four was Metallica, the Black Album.
Oh,
I really like it, and I really, I put that one. The only reason I put that one above Kill 'Em All was just for the production value. They're both fantastic albums, and I mean, literally on those first five records, I like every song. Yeah. So it's just a question of which songs I like more. And I think those records are pretty equivalent for me, and that I like all the songs. But again, it comes down to production value for me. Just having that little bit of extra balls and chunk on the Black Album just was the only reason I put it that teeny bit higher than Kill 'Em All.
Yeah, I mean, this definitely, in all honesty, could be like 1A, 1B, 1C. but it's hard, man.
That was a hard one.
Yeah, and then, well, you've already heard my number four, which is Kill 'Em All, which is, I think, is a fantastic album. So let's go into your number three.
My number three is Ride the Lightning. Oh, well. And, that one for me, like I say, I rank it that high. You know, because I think, you know, my top two are pretty obvious now, but that one, I mean, Fight Fire with Fire is such a kick-ass album opener, and then you go into Ride the Lightning. You know, I mean, Fade to Black and For Whom the Bell Tolls are overplayed, but, you know, when you have an album with Creeping Death, Ride the Lightning, and Fight Fire with Fire, Call of Cthulhu is a phenomenal instrumental.
Yes.
And even the two songs that people never really talk about, you know, Trapped Under Ice and Escape. I mean, Escape is such a simple, like, for them, like, I would say, quote unquote, poppy type of thing.
Yeah.
But even that little drum beat they added in there, to kind of like, you know, like instead of just a, they added that cool little drum fill at the end of it, which I've always thought was really, really neat. So that's why I put that one there. So what about you? What about you for number three?
My number three is Master of Puppets.
Wow, no kidding.
And wow. I cannot continue to go on and just say that it's all 1A, 1B, 1C. But Master, like, and it's Master Puppets is the number three to me because of the two ahead of it. And as much as it's a classic thrash album, and I think it's like number one heavy metal album of all time on like Rolling Stone,
yeah,
things like that. But I mean, you've got, in my opinion, two greater Metallica albums ahead of it. Master Puppets is still a classic. You know, even just this, the song Master Puppets alone, you know, could make for a great album.
That I have a question about that, but I want to hear your number one first, so I'll save it. But
okay,
you know, so what do you have at number two?
Well, you got to go with your number three first.
I gave you my number three, right? The Lightning.
Oh, my bad. Oh, so we're gonna jump. All right. Number two is the Black Album, Metallica, and I when we talked about doing a top 10 list of Metallica albums, I knew that the Black Album to me had to be number two. For the simple fact of, like, this is where I came into the band. This is the album I listened to every day for 2 years straight. This is the album that made me love the band. And I know there's five singles off this album that are way overplayed. But if you go back and just listen to, like, Holier Than Thou and Don't Tread on Me and, you know, Through the Never and, you know, all those songs, Wolf and Man, and play all those songs, and this is a heavy fucking album, and, you know, like you said, yeah, the production is great on it. You know, there's really not a bad song on it, and I know it's their most popular album. Obviously, you said it, like, it sold about 17 million copies, you know, and so, but to me, this was my gateway into the band, and if I'm kind of going with my heart on this one, also having the Black Album number two.
Yeah, I could see that. Like I said, it's a great record. And it's heavy as hell, but my number two, I've got Master of Puppets.
Nice.
And it's interesting we both have the same number one, obviously. But
that's
I mean, Puppets for me is an absolutely, it's basically like a perfect album, damn near. And you know, I mean, again, it's one of those records where every song is just so badass, and I think it rightfully was listed as the greatest heavy metal album of all time, even though it's not my favorite. It's definitely, like, you know, top two or three or whatever. But the influence for as much influence as Kill 'Em All had to make a bunch of metal bands after that, Master of Puppets became the benchmark for what a metal album was supposed to be.
Oh, absolutely. There were so many bands that I even remember through the mid-2000s with the metalcore bands and all that stuff. Even I think Avenged Sevenfold said that City of Evil was going to be their Master of Puppets. Every band wants to have their Master of Puppets, and then they want to have their Black Album. Like, it's almost like a blueprint, like you said, for bands coming up.
Oh, Avenged Sevenfold got their Black Album, all right, considering they ripped it off for that second-to-last record they put out. Man. So
I know you're probably a hater, but I have a soft spot for Avenged Sevenfold.
Oh, I can't stand that band. And it's not even, like, the musicianship and the music itself is great, but M. Shadow is just one of those singers. You know, you have those guys like you.
No, yeah, it's an acquired taste. Even when City of Evil first came out, I had Waken the Fallen, which I thought was a great heavy album with screams on it. And then when City of Evil came out, I was kind of bummed that they kind of went more in almost a poppier version of the band. But then going back, listening to Awakening of the Fallen, I mean, he sings on half that album and just never registered with me. But yeah, he has it. My wife hates his voice, hates that band.
Yeah.
But to me, like, I just, you know, it resonated one day, and, you know, it kind of crossed the threshold because, you know, musically that band is amazing too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but there's just some guys' voices are like that. You know, like the guy Volbeat's another one. I mean, I don't really like their music either, but ooh, that voice, I'm just like, stop it.
Volbeat was a band I had to see live before I got it. And as soon as I saw it, like, I went with a friend of mine, and we went and saw him open for, who did they open for? It was somebody weird. I almost feel like they opened for Danzig. I mean, I could be way
they've
wrong.
They've had some weird tours.
But I mean, it's like early on in their career. But, you know, it was like one of those things where, or maybe they just headlined and I was just whatever, but I went with a friend of mine. But we went and saw him, and I was still kind of skeptical, but about three songs into it, I was like, okay, makes sense now. And now I'm not like throwing them on the Spotify or anything all the time, but you know, I like them when they come on.
Awesome. Well, I think that leaves our number one, which you know, we don't have to debate since we both have the same record, the right. Mighty and Justice for All.
I was going
to
say S&M, but
yeah, I quit.
Ah, damn it. I guess, D, you can listen to the show again, so because John has left the
building. Yeah, email him back. You're in the clear, bro.
I did actually email him back. I emailed him very positive, like, sorry for the, your intent, sorry for upsetting you. Hate to lose a listener. I did tell him that he could continue to listen and like me and hate you. And because in all honesty, I mean, that's what makes a good show. I mean, if you have two hosts, I guess there are a few shows out there I like both hosts. But I mean, most of the time, there's one show, there's a host you hate, and there's a host you like. And, the host you hate gets on your nerves, and the host you like, you like a lot. Like, there are probably not many shows that I like both hosts. Like, I think it's kind of a good dynamic to have.
Yeah, definitely.
But so, Justice for All is something we both like, so let's talk about Justice for All.
Yeah, I think for me, what makes it my favorite Metallica record is when you hear people talk about, the classic years of Metallica and what, the words that are used to define Metallica. I think those words define the Justice record. People say they're angry, they're a thrash band. They're a little bit progressive at times, because I mean, there really was some pretty intricate guitar stuff going on. And it was the word is angry. When you think about Metallica, they were an angry band, and they were heavy, and they were powerful, and just like, and that's everything that defines the Justice record. I mean, that you can, I just listened to it again the other day, driving to Lima, and I mean, that record is just, they are pissed off on that album, and it just makes for such a great listening experience if you're into that kind of music.
Yeah, no, there's such a precision to that album that, they always talk about Jason kind of being lowered in the mix, and actually I did a record with Steve Thompson at one point, who was a producer mixer on that album, and he wasn't even out of his cab to our studio before I was like, where's the bass on Justice for All? he was like, oh man, Lars asked me to put it 2 dB lower, which is the same thing he said 1,000 times, but he said it to my face. But but looking back on it, I've heard like Injustice for Jason, like those little YouTube clips of people playing bass over Injustice for All, and
I love it.
I love it. But in all honesty, I don't think that album needs bass but I'm just saying it doesn't need that rhythm from Kirk. It's James and Lars so locked in that you don't need anything else. Like that's all you need on that album. And it's, and that album to me is a blueprint for the entire metalcore genre, because I think that, I think that whole 2004 to 2010, genre of bands all love Injustice for All.
Yeah, definitely. See, I prefer it with bass. Like when I listen to it, I do go listen to the YouTube one where the guy added the bass track. It adds that depth to it and makes it even heavier. I mean, stuff like the breakdown in Blackened is just, when you actually have that low end.
Yeah.
Crank. I mean, that's, oh my God. I think that also shows, like you said, what an incredible album it is, that you don't have bass on there, and it's still just, it's such a visceral listening experience, that album. I mean, I'll never forget, going and buying, I think, 3 copies of that album, because I just wore it out. I just listened to it to a point where I warped or snapped the actual tape in the cassette. And as a 12-year-old kid, when you're just about to go into your teenage years and stuff like that, I mean, I know it sounds totally cliche, but it's like, I was getting into my geeky phase, and I was going into junior high, and I was, getting into being like the nerdy kid. And that was kind of like the fuck you that, you know, a kid like me needed to turn to. It's like that was my escape from kids picking on me at school, was to go home and be like, yeah, well, you're listening to, you know, shit like Poison and, you know, Warrant and stuff, and I'm busy listening to, you know, And Justice for All, and, you know, See Your Mother Put to Death, See Your Mother Die.
how old
it's like,
you
go
again?
Fuck yourself. When it came out in 88, I was 12.
So, okay. So you're what, 42?
41.
41, okay. 41, okay. So I'm 38. So yeah, I mean, basically 3 years later when Black Album comes out, I'm in the same exact boat to where, you know, the Black Album comes into my life. You know, the kids at school are completely different than me. You know, I'm growing my hair long, all that other crap. And, you know, I went to a predominantly white high school. I went to the same high school that Taylor Swift ended up going to. I went to the same same high school that, like, Roy Orbison's kids went to, Johnny Cash's kids went to. It was public school, but it was still, like, you know, affluent part of town, even though we lived on, like, the other side of the tracks kind of thing. So while they were all listening to, which band I got into later, Sublime, but a band that, you know, they were all listening to Sublime and all that stuff, I was like, no, fucking Megadeth and then Slayer and Metallica. And then I went heavier and I got into like Obituary and Cannibal Corpse and Deicide and all that stuff. And then I got super, super metal. And then they, you know, they got into like Fish and all that stuff. So yeah, I mean, that's basically the same thing. You know, my teenage angst years were Kiss, Metallica, and then even, you know, way heavier into bands, you know, to where you couldn't read the logo, let alone make out anything they were saying.
Right. See, I'm not a death metal guy, so the heaviest I got was like Pantera and Slayer and stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe an Obituary record here and there, but.
So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a soundtrack, and, you know, so I have to ask.
Okay.
You know, being a Metallica fan, I know that you just described why you're so into the Black Album, but it does beg the question, because I don't think very many true diehard Metallica fans would rank the Black Album above Master of Puppets. That's kind of an interesting decision on your part.
Well,
so,
like I said, I mean, it was mainly from the heart, you know, that, like, that's my gateway to Metallica was the Black Album. And then when you go back and you get past, once you get past Enter Sandman and The Unforgiven, you know, and get into the deep cuts, like a Holier Than Thou, like an Of Wolf and Man, and, you know, Holier Than Thou, things like that. Did I just say that twice? I don't know. Whatever. But once you get into, like, into those songs.
You like that song.
Yeah, once you get into those songs, you know, Don't Tread on Me and things like that. I mean, they're still heavy as fuck. And, you know, it's just the gateway. It's nothing more than that. Like I said, you know, 1, 2, and 3 could be 1A, 1A, 1, you know, 1C. But for this list, I needed it to be number 2 just to kind of show my respects and say thank you to the Black Album for changing my life.
I totally get it, because I know, like, it was easier for me to make that decision. But, you know, it's kind of like people just go nuts when I say, you know, that my favorite Star Wars movie is Episode 3. They're like, that's one of the prequels. And it's like, but I have an emotional connection to that one because of, you know, seeing it with my brother in the theater and all the events surrounding it that we were doing, you know, hanging out together. And so every time I watch it, it kind of brings me back to this really cool time.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you do have that emotional connection. And then people say, well, what do you think the best Star Wars movie is? And I say Empire Strikes Back. So I think there's a difference between best and favorite. And I think that applies here probably.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember watching Attack of the Clones on my first ever big tour of the country. Our drum tech had it and played it in his laptop, and I was watching it in the van on tour. And, you know, like, I have an emotional connection to Attack of the Clones now because of that time period. And I'm like, man, Attack of the Clones is a pretty fucking good movie, you know, which I'm pretty right? sure, but I'm pretty sure it's, you know, panned overall by most people. But, you know, that time period and emotional connection to it, I totally get.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like I say, it sounds like that's, you know, for you, like, you know, Puppets could be, you would say, you know, which is a better Metallica album? You could potentially say, you know, Master of Puppets. But for you, if you say favorite, you know, you would definitely say,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, Black Album.
I mean, I can say that Ride the Lightning is probably better than the Black Album, but
yeah.
for a top 10 list for me right now in where I am in my life and all that other nonsense, Like, you know, Ride the Lightning's 5, Black Album's 2, and the Justice for All is number 1. And, you know, that could easily have been Master Puppets 1, Justice 3. You know, that's the beauty of a top 10 list, is it could be, you know, however you want it to be, except for Saint Anger being number 1.
I know. if Saint Anger is number 1 on your list, you are not a Metallica fan. I can officially say that, and it doesn't bother me saying that, making it like that, you know. I was actually kind of surprised at how easy it was for me to come up with my list.
Yeah, it was.
I didn't have to think about it.
I texted you earlier today, and I kind of had, you know, like we both said the same thing. Our 10 and 1 are probably pretty easy, but it's just getting the ones in the middle are the hard part. And you know, quickly jotted this down, and you know, I'll stand by it. And you know, since both of ours were Justice for All was number 1, I'll put this out there to the listeners. If you've listened this far and you have your top 10 list, make sure to hit us up on Facebook, hit us up on Twitter, and let us know what your top 10 list is on your Metallica albums. And all right, and we'll play one more thing. I think I've heard another podcast do this, and I know ranking your top 10 Metallica albums is kind of hacky to begin with, but you know, you and I are kind of filling out this thing, so easy topics right off. You know, the next thing is going to be our top 3 Trickster albums. I don't even know if they have 3 albums, but I'm sure they do. Go ahead.
We'll be onto politics and religion in about 3 episodes. Don't worry.
Yeah, the Talk Tubi podcast will not make it to episode 115.
Right.
Yeah. Make sure to hit us up, Facebook, Twitter. You know, you can hit the Gmail, talktomeTalk@gmail.com, facebook.com/talktomeTalk, Twitter's @talktomeTalk, and let us know what your top 10 Metallica albums are. And then if you could take one album off here and put on either, you know, like we talked about earlier, Live, Shit, Binge, and Purge, Garage Days, you know, what would you take off and put on?
Man, that's, for me, I know that it would definitely be Live, Shit, and Garage Days. Honestly, I would also then put Garage Inc. because
we'll give you that. I mean, Garage Inc. is kind of a culmination of everything, so yeah.
Yeah, but I would still put original Garage Days on there with it.
Right. When Garage Inc. came out, I think it was, you know, the 2-disc Garage Inc. set where the original Garage Days was involved. So we'll encapsulate all of Garage Inc. into one thing.
Oh no, we won't.
Okay. Oh, okay. No, my bad.
No, because if I put Garage Days Revisited, the 997 EP or whatever it was called, and then I put Garage Inc. and then I put Live Shit, that means I can completely erase Load, Reload, and Saint Anger. And it also means that the original Garage Days is on there twice. And that is more than good enough to be on there twice.
Well, I mean, Metallica is the original greatest cover band of all time.
Right? Dude, Helpless is like one of my all-time favorite Metallica tunes.
How many dudes out there right now, like Diamond Head guys, the Blitzkrieg guys, you know, any of those, even the Misfits, are just racking in the dough off of, you know, songwriting credits, things like that from Metallica covering them. Like, I just wonder, like, you feel like you must have just hit the lottery if Metallica's like, yeah, I think we're going to cover a Gatlin song. You guys mind? And we're like, fuck yeah, we're going to do that, you know?
Like, hell yeah, I don't mind. Feel free, Lars. You could screw up the drums all you want.
I mean, you think a band like Diamond Head could go out and play an 8-song set, and 4 of them you will know word for word, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a band like Budgie, who's ever heard of Budgie? Like, unless you're actually Dave Mustaine or James Hetfield or something, you know, whoever really listened to Budgie? But, you know, you listen to Metallica, you know, Bread fan, so there it is.
Yeah. And the one great thing is when I interviewed Doyle from the Misfits, he actually credited Metallica for kind of breaking them, you know, for Cliff wearing the Misfits shirt, for them covering for covering the Misfits, because, you know, that, I mean, I don't know how many Misfits fans' gateway to the Misfits was Garage Days.
Yeah, totally. Speaking of him, I always, and I think everybody does, I really wonder what the heck would have happened with their career if he hadn't died. Like, would they have taken the Load, Reload type of turn? Would they have even taken, would they have even taken the Black Album turn? I mean, it
all right,
was,
here's my honest opinion on this. I think obviously some of the Justice stuff they were probably writing with Cliff around.
And yeah, well, he's got songwriting credits on To Live Is to Die.
Yeah, so you got that going on. And then Cliff, I think the Black Album would still probably have been in the cards, because as much as everyone gives Cliff credit for being the songwriter and the thrash guy of the band, I mean, he was also a huge, you know, Skinner fan, Allman Brothers fan, you know, radio song kind of fan. I think the Black Album would have came too. Now Load and Reload in a Cliff with a haircut and eyeliner and all that stuff, I don't know about that one, but I still think that maybe like those songs are probably songs that Cliff would have played, because they had that kind of Southern rock feel to them. And I think as much as Cliff was a metal dude, I think he was also a, you know, kind of a lazy stoner Southern rocker, you know?
Yeah. I just don't know if it would have gotten that far though, because I mean, it's pretty widely known now that they were, you know, a pubic hair away from actually firing Lars Ulrich after the touring cycle for Puppets. So if you fire Lars, and they were firing him because he was just not a competent enough drummer for what they wanted to do. It's an interesting thing to think about, because like, first of all, if you fire Lars, you get a guy in there that's like you said, like a Dave Lombardo, like a total, just a slamming drummer. Like, yeah, the band's going to get tighter. Are they going to keep playing metal like that? You don't know, but obviously the musicianship, the quality of it will go up.
Yeah.
But then again, Lars is such a hype man.
See, yeah, you lose the business side of it. You lose the hype man side of it. You lose like that visionary side that Lars had. So I Metallica could have easily ended up in the, you know, in the Exodus camp, in the Testament camp. You know, they had their peak. You know, say Master of Puppets is their peak. You know, they peak out. They've written the greatest metal album of all time. And then Cliff is still alive, and Injustice for All isn't as angry, isn't as precise. You know, there's bass all over it, wah-wah pedals on the bass and everything else. I mean, you've got, you know, you never know what Injustice for All is going to be, and then maybe they don't do the Black Album because, you know, on Injustice for All, they brought in Paul Bostoff or some garbage drummer. You know, and then they're just basically, now we wouldn't be having this conversation. We would be like, what was the... Remember that band Metallica that had five great albums? You know, like, you wonder where, you know, where life takes you in these things. And, you know, having Cliff in the band, definitely, you know, obviously Kill 'Em All has Cliff's playing on it, but Cliff didn't really have anything to do with those songs as much as A Ride the Lightning. And you see the leaps and bounds that Cliff had in the band from album one to album two. And then Cliff is more involved, and Jay, you know, James looks up to Cliff, and Lars looked up to Cliff. Everyone in the band looked up to Cliff because Cliff was such an amazing musician, not necessarily just a bass player, but he knew music theory. He knew everything about a song. He knew about songwriting. And so they all look up to Cliff. And so they make a great, you know, he guides them to A Ride the Lightning. He guides them to A Master of Puppets. And then they're on their own for Injustice for All. And so you never know where Cliff would have taken the band.
I'd like to go back to you referencing a crap drummer, and you used Paul Bostaff's name. I don't think that's ever been said, but
I'm so against Paul Bostaff right now. I saw him on...
Why?
I never liked him in Slayer, ever. Like, even back in the day, back when he was on, like, Divine Intervention or whatever. And then he was on Louder Than Life last year with Slayer, and we have media passes and all this other crap. So we're there watching the show, and he just does not have the same feel as Dave Lombardo. And Dave Lombardo, friend of the show, former guest of the Talk To Me podcast, but Dave Lombardo has a feel to him, and he was the perfect drummer for Slayer. Paul Bostoff, on the other hand, is a comparable drummer, but he just doesn't have the nuance of Dave Lombardo. So we see him at Louder Than Life, and I'm just not feeling it. He's playing the old songs, and I'm like, ah, this is garbage. So me and the other guys I was with, me and Mike, former host of Talk To Me, you know, we go back to the media tent, we sit down, and then they're on Jimmy Fallon the other night playing Raining Blood, and I see him again, and I'm like, God, it just doesn't feel right. Like, I think Gary Holt is the perfect fit for Slayer. Paul Bostoff, garbage.
Wow. Slayer to me has never been one of those bands that, I mean, the word feel I would ever think of using. It's just, you just go.
There's a go, I mean, but Dave Lombardo had this, you know, he's Cuban. He has this like Latin influence in his drumming. There's a feel to Dave Lombardo that you don't notice until he's not there. And then when he's not there and you see just a long-haired white dude named Paul Bostoff playing those same drum parts, you're like, oh, I get it now. Like, there's a difference between right. Dave Lombardo and Paul Bostoff. And, you know, I think we talked about this maybe off air, and this being a Brendan Small episode, Gene Hoagland needs to be in Slayer.
Now, Gene Hoagland, the Atomic Clock, yeah, I just saw him with Testament a couple months ago. That dude is like, oh my God, it's insane what the heck I can do.
Yeah, no, I got it.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, in terms of the, you know, back on the Cliff Burton thing, you know, I mean, James and Lars have both said that, you know, Cliff was really was the leader of the band back then. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what would happen if he was around. Let's say they had fired Lars Ulrich, because Lars was that, you know, the promotion guy and all that, but was he that yet?
Yeah.
So would that loss have really been felt at that point, or would it have really just been replacing a drummer? I mean, they were still an opening act for the most part, because their biggest claim to fame, I mean, they had headlined in Europe, and I think they did some headlining shows on their own on Puppets, but the big tour was opening for Ozzy on the Ultimate Sin tour.
Yeah.
So,
which is ironically like the last, was it the last major tour that they were the opening band on?
Yeah. Cause after that, when they put out Justice, they were doing the arena stuff. So, you know,
all right. There's a shot. So back to Cliff, and you and I both grew up playing in bands. You know, you sang in bands, you played bass in bands. I played in local bands and did some other stuff too. But you look back to Metallica, and they were on their way. They had the No Life to Leather demo. They had Ron McGovney on bass, Dave Mustaine. They're crafting what they're going to be. But they see this dude play bass in a band called Trauma, and they want him in the band so bad that the guy says, if you pack up and move from Los Angeles to San Francisco, I'll play in your band. And they do it. That's how much you know that they want them, that they wanted him in the band, and that's how much they respected his playing as they moved their entire band to San Francisco.
And I don't think it hurt that, you know, LA was, you know, at the very, very embryonic stages of the glam thing with Motley Crue. And so they were, you know, instead of the leather and makeup stuff, you know, that was about to come, you know, they're just a bunch of sweaty, dirty guys in, you know, denim and black t-shirts. So for them to have to leave a town that they hated, it wasn't exactly, you know, it's not like they were in this great town. They loved their hometown and they just made this huge sacrifice. It was, well, fuck LA. We hate it anyway. So yeah, you know.
No, I get it. I knew that they hated being in LA, but I mean, you still got to think. I mean, Slayer came out of LA. Megadeth ended up coming out of LA. You know, it's not like they were the, you know, there were no bands that ended up coming out of LA that went on to become thrash, you know, stalwarts or whatever you want to call it. Yes, Bay Area thrash is a term. You know, you talk about Bay Area thrash and you talk about Exodus and Testament and Slayer and Violence and all those bands. But, you know, and it's funny, when I talk about Bay Area thrash, I honestly skip over Metallica because they just transcended Bay Area thrash to me.
Yeah. No, I get that, and it's definitely a very good point. And you know, I think you know, saying that his talent obviously speaks for itself, that they would up and move to another city, you know, regardless of the fact they hated LA, that's still a huge undertaking to just go for one guy.
Right.
You know, to just go, yeah, I'm only going to play for you if you move where I'm at. that's pretty huge. So
I mean, you got to think about it. And there's no reference to this, but I mean, you know, back to you and I played in bands. I mean, could you imagine playing in a band and then, you know, you're Cleveland, Akron, you know, that area of the country, and you go to Cincinnati or you go to Louisville or you go to Indianapolis and see a guy play and you're like, holy fuck. And that guy goes, well, if you move here, I'll be in your band. And you uproot three to four dudes and move them to a whole nother town. You know, to where you're leaving family, you're leaving friends, you're leaving loved ones, you're leaving, you know, girlfriends that maybe, you know, she has the job and you play your music at night. You know, that's such a crazy thing to just uproot your entire universe and move it to another town over one guy, over a bass player of all things.
Yeah, it's probably the only time it's ever happened in the history of recorded music. The bass player dictates where the band's going to go or else he's not playing.
Right. All right, man. Well, I could talk about Metallica all night, and I can see that you will too. And then I'm assuming we will get more and more into this. Since we both picked Injustice for All as our favorite album, let's go ahead and take a song off of this to end out this episode.
Which one is your favorite?
I'm going to, off the top of my head, I want to go Dyer's Eve.
Okay. Do that one. I'll let you pick because my favorite is Black, and that's my favorite Metallica song ever. So whichever one you want to pick. But you know what? Go Dyer's Eve because Blackened has that long intro and Dyer's Eve just gets right to the point. So
once again, thank you guys for checking this episode out. Thank you to Brendan Small of Metalocalypse, Death Clock, and Galacticon for coming on. And until next week. So with all the fluctuation and everything, I guess Thursdays will be the podcast day from here on out. So for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey.
I'm John Drake.
And we will talk to you guys next Thursday.
Hey, everybody. This is David Allison from Megadeth, and you're listening to the Talk To Me podcast.